Hi, I'm Serena.
And I'm Rachel.
We're the hosts of Book Tales.
If you like reading books,
drinking cocktails,
and Scottish accents,
then meet your new favourite podcast.
Come with us as we explore different themes from romanticy to horror and everything in between.
We pair each book with a bespoke cocktail and tell you everything you'll need to make one.
And each week, play our fun game tailored to each book.
Find Book Tales wherever you get your podcasts. So grab your book.
Grab your booze.
For Book Tales.
Hi guys, I'm Bree.
And I'm Allie. This is Off Script.
If you think about it, books are potential scripts for movies.
When this adaptation happens, typically it's disappointing because they went off script.
In this series, we will be talking about how off script they went.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Why?
Why?
Oh, no. All right.
Oh, no.
Hello.
Welcome.
To.
Off script.
A podcast
where
we
discuss
book,
just book,
book stories
to movie adaptations. We usually say books in their shows or books in their movies.
Well, I was gonna say book to movie adaptations this time. Anyways, I'm Bree.
I'm Allie.
And that is
John.
All right, John, you want to paint the picture?
I'll paint the picture.
Actually, wait, first we should say, hey, welcome back. We're here to discuss the third and final Magician's book. But before we do, John, what's the picture?
We're eating cookies.
You're eating cookies.
I'm eating most of the cookies today, but they're delicious. There's so many flavors. And your mom makes some of the best ones. Shout out to Cherry.
Yeah.
Cherry, who made some delicious oatmeal chocolate chip. And then also this crazy pumpkin cookie with
cheesecake.
Cheese. It was basically pumpkin cheesecake because it had a cream cheese filling inside the cookie. It was phenomenal. That's what we're doing. That's the picture.
All right.
I love it.
Let's get started.
Okay. So, book kicks off. Quentin is in a bookstore with several other people. The owner says, "Hey, we're closing." So some people leave, but then several stay. And then the people that stayed, he ushered them back into the room. And there's a crow there. And the crow's talking to them. And he has a mission for them, but it's dangerous. They have to do magic that is supposedly impossible. And they have to play this guy in magical card games. And Quentin wins. And that's how they move on to the next step. And now they're down to five people. And they're looking for a briefcase from the missing Chatwin. From one of the Chatwins.
So in season four, when the library has magic all on lockdown, Quentin goes and plays a magical card game with these people to get, what are they called, John? What, Deweys?
Yeah.
Which I thought was actually hilarious because, you know, in the library, it's the Dewey decimal system.
Yes.
So when they were called Deweys, which were the coins that they could get so that they could do extra magic, I was like, yes, that makes so much sense. Anyways, so they're trying to get a Dewey from this guy and Quentin has to go and do a magic thing with them. Well, also not being able to do magic because, well, the library has magic on lockdown.
Yeah, but also there was a crow. The guy had a crow in the show. That was a callback to the books. They never, the bird never talked or anything, but that's what the bird was representing. And also, the briefcase they're trying to steal is from the couple. And the couple is in the last season of the TV show. So
when Quentin is dead. And that
I told Bree, I was like, okay, so you're probably not going to have to, like, worst case, watch season five before we record because Quentin's not in it. So obviously the books are not going to match it. Well, then I read it and I'm like, oh my gosh, the couple is who they're stealing from. And it's like, they're in the season five. I was like, yeah, Bree, you got to watch all of them before we do.
Yeah. Yeah. I was mad.
I mean, Quentin dying.
Hold on.
Is a controversy.
John. Tell the people why freaking Jason left the show.
Well, from what I've read, I mean, I'm not Jason, obviously. As
I
you
wish
know.
You were.
Oh, God, get out of here.
Oh, gosh.
From what I've read, I mean, what the media says and what I've read about, you know, doing some Googling as you do, he wanted to spend some time with his wife, his dog, and be able to be at home and live in New York. He felt like him and the creative directors of the show, they felt like Quentin's storyline had run its course. They not necessarily run its course to the point where he needed to go, but they felt like the main story of Quentin had come to a good conclusion.
I think it's stupid.
I thought season four ending was perfect, though. And I was like, awesome. And I was mad when there was a season five, but then I really liked season five. But it was like a season four ending could have been a perfect...
It could. I would have still been pissed because fucking Quentin. Quentin doesn't die. I love.
But did you like him and Penny at the end? How Penny helped him cross over?
Yeah, it was kind of cute. But all I could think as I'm sitting there hating how much Quentin died, I was like, Allie's going to give me so much shit because what's my biggest, what do I always say about?
Oh, because you never want the hero to win?
Yes.
Yes. And finally he doesn't win?
But he didn't win in the books either. Like in the books, he kind of had to like resign and be like, okay, whatever, I'm going to start this new thing and I'm going to start it with Alice, but Alice hates me. Like he didn't totally win in the books either.
No, no, no. They get on the giant horse.
They get on the giant horse
together, and
Alice,
you can tell.
Alice says, this doesn't mean we're back together.
No.
Yes, you can tell they're going to get back together.
Yes, exactly. But... yes, exactly. So there, it was a cute play on their relationship most likely blooming again once more. So there's many, many more adventures for them to unfold in the books that you're led to believe on and imagine in your own mind, obviously, because that's how it ends. But I do want to say we both cried. Did you cry?
Oh, like a fucking baby.
When Quentin died? And during the whole like ceremony when his friends are mourning him and Penny, you know, helps him pass through to the underworld.
Well, I also really hate that there's a whole episode on Penny getting put in the underworld where he doesn't want to be in the underworld, but then they finally convince him like, oh, this is good. And they're like, hey, you got promoted. And the show ends with like elevator doors opening and he goes, oh, it's you. It's been a while. And then it's like episode ends. And then four episodes later, guess what? It's because it's Q. I was like, fuck y'all. I already knew it was coming because I spoiled that for myself way before we even started watching and reading this.
But Allie, did you cry?
I think I don't remember, but I feel like I did. I at least teared up.
Oh, I was sobbing.
I wasn't sobbing.
He's my favorite character. How could I not cry that hard?
Yeah, did you tear up at the Elliot Quentin relationship long, like lifelong? And then they...
No, because honestly, I didn't even realize that's what was happening until the end. And I was like, oh, wait, did they get together? So it was, yeah. It was not...
It was lost on you?
Yeah.
Feels bad.
That's hilarious. I guess, so in the last books, the second book's world... is when this whole Quentin and Elliot relationship would have taken place because they had to figure out this mosaic to get a key. And it was in Fillory and it ended up being Quentin and Elliot's quest. That's something that bothered me so much in the show. Every fucking person was always like, oh, this is my quest. Oh, this is my quest. Oh, this is our quest. When in the book, it was really just Quentin always being like, I want the next quest. And then, oh, I guess that must be someone else's quest.
Yeah, well, that's still my favorite episode, so.
I know it is. I know it is. He literally, like, I tried to talk to him during the start of it and goes, you can't talk. This is my favorite episode. I was like, oh, okay.
We have flashbacks to Quentin right after he left Fillory. He had grabbed this paper from the Netherlands before getting back to the real world, and he realized he needed a job. So off to break bills he goes, and Fogg gave him a teaching job, but he needed discipline to do it. So he turns out... his discipline was minor mending, so he could break a little coffee cup broke and he could mend it and fix it. And so that's what he became a teacher in.
I did like in the show, because they do tell Quentin that his proficiency is minor mending. And I thought it was very clever how he fixed the mirror that the main librarian dude came and broke. And that's how he was getting rid of the god dude. because I was like, that's a nice way to bring in his discipline into this when he's been disciplineless this whole time.
Yeah, I mean, and to make it feel super impactful when you hear, oh, you're minor mending, you're fixing cups, but like literally his proficiency in that area just probably is what made it happen because of the speed and the the speed of the cast, the speed it fixed itself, the speed or just like the power of the cast and the just mending it. Probably, like, I think if anyone else did it, it probably wouldn't have mended quite as well, perhaps, because, I mean, it's his discipline. So, yeah, it really just makes it very clear that minor mending is not so minor if it played such a critical role.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I forgot about that. So that makes me really happy because how he uses it in the book obviously didn't happen. Yeah. And I was like, well, that sucks because that was like such a nice tie-in. Mm-hmm. So he still did get to do his tie-in.
Yeah, he did.
Well, he also fixes the mug for Alice.
He fixes the mug for Alice. And in that's his, like, he says something about like how sometimes broken things can get put back together. And that's his, like, I can start to trust you again. God, I'm going to cry.
Oh, yeah, she's so sad.
You can keep going. Okay. Oh my gosh. All right. So Quentin is working and things at school are happening. Like, these books start mating and the school has a ghost. I will say I love that they said the books mating because that happened in the first season. Yeah, it was a super minor thing. I was like, oh, they did that. And then the pervy ghost. But that's what I thought it was, the pervy ghost, but it's not. It ended up being Alice.
Oh, duh. But yeah.
That's why I put it in here. I was like, oh, there's the pervy ghost. We're not going to talk about it, I bet, but it's there. And then, no, it ended up being Alice, but whatever.
No, there's a pervy ghost who's a traveler in the show, and it's just mainly there to help Penny when he gets stuck in the astral plane.
I thought that was I thought that storyline was so... The storyline itself wasn't dumb. The way they got out of it was dumb by a brand new Penny coming. They're like, shoot, we don't know how to get Penny out of here.
Oh, I was glad having no Penny. And then he came back. I was like,
yeah, but I'm like, that was the laziest writing, I feel like.
Oh, no. Because it was way more involved than that. Because the Penny 40 going and having his issues in the underworld, you know, and then Penny 23 coming along and we find out that Quentin is the beast in that timeline and so forth. Penny's not the only one from 23 that continued on in the show. We had Marina being an integral part of the show moving forward and for a couple of seasons. Fog. And then we had Fog for like the last, basically the last season almost, but I think maybe even a little bit in season 4, but I think mostly season 5. But yeah, so I don't think that was necessarily just a way for Penny to get back in the show and be part of the main story, but because I think the several other characters that came back with him also played such a critical role moving forward. I think it was planned, but that's just my opinion.
I guess. I just figured, I wish they had figured out how to actually get Penny out of there.
Yeah. Well, my thing, he was happy where he was. Like, he became happy where he was. I think if we saw him doing his job or saw him doing ways to help the people who were living while being in the underworld, that would have been cool.
Yeah, I could see that. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
But just
and I mean,
like,
there is a whole, like, episode where he does do that.
Right.
So they could have just did that more. But I also think they liked his chemistry with everyone else.
Yeah.
So wanted to bring him back without bringing that Penny back.
Okay, so Quentin found out his dad died and he went home and to help his mom out, and he's pondering his dad's life in his office, and he's like, oh my gosh, was my dad a magician? And
oh my god, in freaking season 1, Quentin does magic for his dad. Quentin's dad also dies in like season 3 of the show, and actually season 4 of the show, because that's when he goes in cleans out the stuff in the little god Elliot possessed dude comes and is like, this is a weird way to deal with grief.
Yeah. So, Quentin went through all his dad's stuff and he's slowly figuring out if he was a, or he's figuring out he was a magician, or is he still skeptical about it? He gets upset and he starts crying. His mom takes him back to break bills, and the paper from the Netherlands woke up and starts moving around on his desk.
Yeah, that does not happen. He never thinks that his dad was a magician.
Okay.
In the show.
So Quentin took the paper after teaching and tried to decipher it. He was having a lot of trouble because there's this plant that he has no idea what it is. He took it to the botanist teacher and they ended up being friends. And he's really enjoying being a teacher. And then he got mail saying, hey, if you ever want a job, come to this bookstore in March. Crumpled it up and threw it away.
The fucking paper Alice finds after Quentin is dead. And then she's like, oh my God, I need you to say it, John.
I can't talk about Quentin being dead.
Oh my gosh. I didn't realize I was going to be that emotional about this.
Quentin dies and Alice finds this in his desks, basically, and it's the paper for the plant, which they come to find out is the world seed, which can create another world. And, you know, in the show, they find it this way. And also later on in the last season of the show, you find out that Alice is in talk with Santa, and Santa says, that was your gift. That was your gift. I gave that to you. I put it there. And she was like, how'd you know I'd find it? And he was like, I know you, Alice, like that you were going to find that in that desk, because that's just your connection with Q. You were going to find it no matter what. And so we find out that Santa was the one who planted the world seed paper, which is interesting. Definitely a twist. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the couple really wants that world seed in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really, really. They hunt for it. They try. They at a point they almost have it all together, but obviously the group, one of the most important parts of the final season, it was just them trying to get everything back from the couple and stopping them from utilizing it so that they can use it for themselves.
Yep. So in Fillory, Elliot had to beat up the Lorien guys that were trying to take over. He himself put himself as champion, so no one else had to. And he went to battle. And Poppy and Josh are together, and they're having a baby. And Janet and Elliot are riding this Pegasus. And here comes Ember saying he's leaving because the world's coming to an end.
Okay, so Ember and Umber died in the show in season fucking one. And Josh gets with Margot. He's also a werewolf. The Lorien thing happens in basically, I think it's season two. Was it season two or season one? Season two. Mm-hmm. And that's, he puts himself to battle the king, but that's when they fall in love. And yeah. So basically none of that happened. Except for, actually, no, the champion battle thing happened in season two, but the outcome was not the same.
Okay. So Quentin's trying to do his quest for the crow now, but he's in limbo. Oh, no, let's try that again. He's in a limbo to the location to get to the quest, and they start talking. They all introduce each other with their code names or whatever, and they get the lowdown of what's happening, and then what the suitcase looks like, and they don't know how long it's going to take to prepare, so they're hanging out at this bar at the hotel, and him and this girl named Plum are chatting. And she's from his past, and we find out that he no longer works at Breakbills, and she no longer goes there.
The whole Plum storyline comes into play with Penny, and Plum is a fucking traveler with him, and Plum knows who she is. It's a big, huge twist in the book, who she is. That's why I'm not going to say who she is right now. But she just comes out and is like, I'm sorry. I go by my middle name. Here's my full name to Penny. Driving crazy. Plus, I was mad because she's supposed to be hanging out with Q, but instead Q's dead.
I didn't even remember who she was. I was like, oh my gosh, they didn't even have Plum. And she's like this main character. Mm-hmm. And then Bree's like, no, she's the one with Penny. I was like, oh yeah, that's right. All right. So background on Plum. She was involved with this league at Breakbills, and they wanted to pull a prank on this guy because he kept shorting them on their wine every night. So he had these special pencils that he absolutely loved, and they took all the pencils and put the shavings all around him and freak him out. Kind of reminded me of like the Godfather with the horse head in the bed.
Oh, yeah.
And here we find out Plum is the last descendant of the Chatwins, but nobody knows that.
Yeah. Well, Plum does in the show, and then she tells everyone in the show.
So we're following Plum, and she's pulling a prank on Horton, was his name. And they find this magic passageway, and she calculates wrong, though, and she ends up going the wrong way, and she goes into the past, and she gets sent to Fillory, where Q and everyone is battling Martin way back in book one. Mm-hmm. And she freaked out and ran, and then she runs and sees this evil blue girl smiling at her in the mirror, and it's the Breakbills ghost. And Q comes in, smashes the mirror. They get out of there, and he's like, that wasn't a ghost. That was a Niffin. Fog comes in, fires him, expels Plum, tells and Q's like, before you go, here's the correct passage to get to where you're supposed to. And then so Plum goes and does that. But then instead of being mean to Horton, they sit and talk. And it turns out he's been skipping out on their wine because he's been leaving it for the Breakbills ghost because she scares him. And she's like, yep, she scares me too.
So the mirror world comes into play in season 3. And it's because the librarian's daughter gets trapped in the mirror world. Mm-hmm. And then Alice is one who helps her get the kid out of the mirror world.
Yes.
But I did love that Marlee Matlin played Harriet, mm-hmm. which was the main librarian's daughter, because she is a deaf actress. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was cool. And sometimes she was not signing what they were saying she was signing. I was like, gotta love it. Gotta love it.
So they decided to go to Breakville South since their mission is taking so long to start. And they know it's not possible what they're asked to do, because they have to break some unbreakable bond. And so, but they're like, Mayakovsky might know. So they're figuring out how to get there. Q's like, let's just take a plane. And Plum's like, no, let's turn into animals again. So they compromised and they flew part of the way, and then they turned into whales and then birds the rest of the way. And while they were whales, they learned how magical whales are and that they're keeping something hidden down in the deep.
John, do you want to explain everything that happened in the TV show with this? He loved this.
The whale part?
Yeah. And then we were at Enchant, and did you see the big whale? John was like, look, it's the magician whale.
It was just interesting finding out, you know, obviously that this is totally different from the books, right? The show has whales that are magicians, and they're constantly tracing out kind of like wards down at the bottom of the ocean, keeping down the Kraken from coming up. Because if the Kraken were to rise, it would be the end of the world.
And it turns into a time loop when the Kraken comes out because of these wards that the whales are doing.
And in the show, Elliot realizes this is the only way is to actually get the whales to stop doing the wards and let the Kraken go in order to succeed with the time loop coming to an end and actually being able to finish their quest.
Mm-hmm. Also, the whole Mayakovsky thing, them doing the unbreakable bond, is actually when the god has possessed Elliot. He has a sister that he released who then possessed Julia. And so they're needing to get these gods out of their friends. And the only way to do that is to put them in this bottle. But they're like, they're gods. They're too strong to be stuck in a bottle. So they're like, okay, we need to put an unbreakable bond on that so that they can't break out of there. And so then that's when, because then they find out that Mayakovsky, present Mayakovsky, can't talk, can't do anything. So they're like, oh, we gotta go into the past. So that's when Q goes into the past.
Okay, so Quentin and Plum go to Breakbill South, and they find Mayakovsky, and he saw them coming, and they asked for help to unbreak a unbreakable bond. And he's like, that's impossible. You need 100 powerful wizards to do this. And Mayakovsky shows them their lab, and they realize he's a super genius wizard, and he's already figured out, or magician, excuse me, he's already figured out how to break the unbreakable bond, but he's scared to, because that's why he's locked at Breakbill South, is because he's under an unbreakable bond, because he fooled around with a student. They get drunk, hang out, and the next day Q wakes up and he has a coin in his pocket full of power that Mayakovsky had been working on to break his own unbreakable bond. And on one side of the coin, it was the picture of Emily, the student he fell in love with.
So we found out way early in the show that Emily was who Mayakovsky was in love with, and that became a big storyline, and they ended up getting married in the show. And also Mayakovsky breaks his unbreakable bond pretty quickly. He's also a prominent character who keeps popping up pretty often in the show. And he is big in the books, but I feel like he pops up way more in the show. And instead of his coins being full power, it's batteries. You wanted to add?
So in Fillory, all the kings and queens are chatting and they're planning for the end of the world. And Elliot and Janet leave and they go through the forest and they get to the swamp area and there's this turtle Leviathan there. And he basically says, yeah, Fillory's dying. And you know, you need to go talk to the dwarf queen to figure out like what to do next. And he goes to attack them. And Janet froze the whole lake with her new magic weapons and they left.
So they do end up planning for the end of the world, but because they are going to be causing the end of the world, because the Dark King is going to release all of the dead from the underworld into Fillory, which means they'll then spill out into Earth, and that will cause everything to end. And yeah.
Yeah.
So basically none of what you said happens.
No. So Janet told the story of her time in the desert when Elliot was on a boat, or when he was on the boat. She found these people and she was going to take their land, but they said no.
John kept telling me that this happened.
But you didn't remember.
I could not remember this fucking story in the book.
So she had to go in the desert, fill this bag with black sand. It's like one every 1,000 pieces of sand. And she starts working. She's out there for 3 days. She nearly dies, but she goes back full bag. And he's like, ha ha ha, we were just tricking you. And she's like, nope. And she beats the crap out of them and then took their weapons and left.
Okay, but there are differences here.
Okay, first difference. This was a singing episode.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts? My thought first singing episode was like, it was that era where all the shows,
they did all the musicals, it happened. Yeah.
But then it happened again, and then it happened again. And I was like, what is happening?
Well, what's funny, I think my favorite musical episode was this one.
Mine too.
Mm-hmm. Just because at this point, she had still thought that Elliot was dead, had only really recently been told that he wasn't dead, that they could save him. And so she got to have moments with Elliot without having moments with Elliot. Aww. Plus, at this point in the show, too, we hadn't seen Elliot, like our Elliot, who we were used to, in a long time. Yeah. We'd only been seeing the God Elliot this whole time.
Yeah.
So we also then got to see him in a way. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ooh, I like that. But yeah, I got the very last one. I was like, oh, my God, why did we do this again?
Musical episodes, I like them. I like them. I think it's hinted at there's going to be musical elements as soon as we have that episode with Katie, who is singing in the opera type outfit and stuff like that. And that was early on, an earlier season, probably season 3 or something. Mm-hmm. So I think that they were testing it out maybe that way, something like that. But no, I think it's great. I think Elliot's character especially sings very, very well.
He really does. I just love
Katie him. Does too, in like a punk way. And then also in like a pretty way as well. I mean, obviously she does. She can do it both ways. But I think everyone did great. I like the choreography. You can tell everyone has fun with it.
That's so true. You could tell that everyone enjoyed it. But there's so many differences here with this story. So first off, Elliot has a god in him and is possessed and they're trying to get rid of his thing.
Yeah. So when Margot goes out to the desert in the show, it's a bit different. The dude who tells her to go out and fill the bag with black sand basically says, we can craft you the weapons. If you bring us this. And so she does. She brings it back.
Oh, because she finds out, she watches them and he like uses it to get rid of a possession, right?
Yep. Yep. Essentially, these are tools to get rid of possessions. That you can bottle them up. They'll turn into like this sand type mixture, and then they'll just go right into this bottle. And you can plug it and there goes the possession. Everything's fine. So in the end, he does a similar thing where he says, you know, like, oh, yeah, we, you know, this bag of stuff isn't actually that, like, isn't going to do you any good. We weren't telling you the truth.
They do that.
So it's similar in that regard as well. But yeah, I mean, actually, it's really similar.
It's almost
identical, I guess.
Except they don't have the women who are attacking, and they're like, it's all because women get angry and upset, and that's when it comes and possesses them and attacks them. But really, it's actually like these desert goddess things who are trying to help and like are doing whatever women ask them to do.
Yeah, so it's a like a female versus male type situation where there's like just males think that they're dominant situation, and these like sand women, if you will, are trying to assist the women of the village to get out from under the ruling of the men, so to speak, in the village. And kind of doing their bidding in that way. And that's definitely something that they have added in the show from the books. That wasn't the case. But otherwise, Margot does steal those weapons, kick their butt, take their weapons, and not necessarily kick their butt. She kind of has the sand possession sandals. people to do all the butt kicking.
Yeah.
But she does take the weapons, and they become like a helpful tool throughout the rest of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Quentin and Plum are back with the group, and they're getting ready to practice their thieving of this briefcase, and they get to the location. And Crow's like, all right, this is the real thing. They're like, wait, well, this was supposed to be a practice. And they're like, nope, couple's starting to move. We got to go. And sure enough, things don't go smoothly. The Crow and some others start hijacking their plans, and they steal the they're trying to steal the briefcase. Some people die. And finally, they get the case. They open it. Inside is this magic god-killing knife and a book. And one of their party, Asmodeus grabs the knife, says, see Julia, tell her I went fox hunting, and then left. And it's Katie. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And Q and Plum took the book.
Also, did you make mention that the suitcase is Rupert's suitcase in the book? And Rupert is actually the king in the last season.
The dark king in the last season. Yeah. You didn't know that?
I remember being like, what? When I found out. And then I was like, oh, wait. Yeah.
Rupert and Elliot were almost a thing.
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
So the suitcase in the show is actually like a briefcase to keep the world seed warm so that it doesn't die. There's no knife and no book.
Okay. Well, the book is important.
Yes, it is. In the book.
But we're not there yet. First, Elliot and Janet are wandering and they're chatting, and they get to this watcher tree and they find the watcher woman, and it's Jane Chatwin, and she's the dwarf queen also. And they're like, okay, Fillory's dying. Let's do it. And she's like, there's nothing we can do. I'm done with kings and queens. Be gone. And she shooes them away.
I haven't made mention yet that there is actually a dwarf man who is way down at the center of Fillory who controls time.
Oh, yeah.
So it's two different people in the show rather than just being Jane in the book.
Now we're with Quentin and Plum, and they decide to read the book. And it was Rupert Chatwin's. And it's how Fillory began. And Christopher Plover mm-hmm. found out about Fillory because these kids were shipped off to America and they were bored. So they start wandering around, and then finally they start meeting up with this guy, and they tell him all the stories, and he loved the stories. He began writing them down, and Martin ended up not being in them a lot because he stopped going to Fillory, and he would start going to Plover's house alone often, but he warned Rupert, never go there alone. And Martin had stopped being asked to come to Fillory. So one of the siblings said, okay, next time we're summoned, we'll keep the door open and we'll get Martin in. That was the...
Oh, that's so subtle that it flew over my head.
They did it a little bit more detail than I did.
Really?
Yeah. Not a lot. But it was like I could tell something was wrong when Martin would go over there, and he seemed scared if I ever thought about going over there by myself and stuff like that.
Oh, I was house sitting, and I remember I was listening to this while I was showering, this chapter specifically, and like I just missed it.
Yeah,
apparently
that was easy to do with these books and show.
Yeah, yeah. So that gets told in season one. Yes.
So at one point, a library books opens and it's an entry to Fillory. So the sister goes in and Rupert's like, oh my gosh. Okay. And he went to get Martin, and Martin like shoved himself in this book, and this poor book is like choking and dying.
It feels like it's being violated. Yes. Essentially.
Yes.
Otherwise, you know, when the other kids were going to go in, it was like, come in, welcome, go inside me. And then Martin was going in and it was like, oh no, no, please. It was really, really bad.
Yeah. Thank you for that visual. How do I continue? All right. So Rupert, they get down and then they go to like the swamp, and like Martin like knows where he's going, and they swim through the swamp and they end up going to a new castle. It's exactly like Castle Whitespire, except opposite, and it's dark. So they call it Castle Blackspire. And this is where Martin went crazy. They found Umber, and Martin's gonna stay there, and Rupert's like, no, this is bad, and he left. And the book finishes by saying they all grew up to do their own things. He never went back to Fillory. He was never invited back after that, but he begs the gods to please let him and his family come one more time and stay. And Plum's like, I think he's telling the truth, because she never believed in Fillory until now.
Yeah, and fucking none of this happens because Plum already knows who she is and fucking hates her family and calls it the Chatwin curse. And Rupert's Dark King of Fillory in season five.
Yep. But Umber was also found in the Blackspire. Did you mention that?
Oh, no. My bad. Yeah.
Umber is in Blackspire. And how did they get to Blackspire in the show?
Wasn't it with the fairies?
Yeah, I think it was. I'm not actually sure, actually. They ended up going to the other side of the world, though. And it was really cool how they did it visually. And they flew in. You could see how things kind of just, like, flipped upside down and then mm-hmm. right side up again for them once they twisted. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, they were in Blackspire. But Umber wasn't there.
No, Umber was in Earth, posing mm-hmm. as a Fillorian fanatic.
So Plum and Quentin are cleaning up the mess of her apartment because she got it from somewhere and it's just a disaster. And while they're cleaning, he would spontaneously look at the back of the book and the spell page that he has, and he realized it's to make a new land. And he tells Plum he's going to do it. So he wants it to look like the 10-acre woods. So it's like, it's going to be a happy land. It's going to be fine. So Plum and her friend... No, I'll let you go. That happened.
This does not happen. Alice and everyone are the ones making the new world, not Q.
Because Fillory is dying.
Mm-hmm.
So Plum's friends are making fun of her because she's hanging out with Professor Quentin or Coldwater. And she's like, I'm just his apprentice. And she's learning a lot and she's really enjoying it. And he tells her about the plan to make the spell work. And it's crazy, but it does make an accessible door.
Again, that does not happen.
Q and Plum check out their new land, and it was weird. It was like a mirror land. Like, it was like the same but different from the place they just left. And things are off. And Q went to go check something, but he comes back running. And he's like, run, Plum. And they ran into Niffin Alice.
The mirror world in the show is much, much different. They expand upon it as being like a universe where things are kind of put into for some sort of purgatory type place, like the books that, you know, are not necessarily meant for normal people's eyes. They'll throw them in there. I mean, in some cases in the show, they find a book where, you know, they're very lucky they found it because it ends up being a very, very helpful for them in their quest. And, you know, the show takes creative liberties and adds the mirror realm in for other myriads of reasons and storylines throughout the series. So very, very more detailed in the show. I love the visuals of it that they did. The sets were really great. But yeah, no, in the books, the mirror world is just where Quentin and Alice and Plum have found
this world, and everything looks the same, but it's different in weird ways. And yeah, it's interesting. That's all I have to say about that one.
Also, Niff and Alice happened season 2, and then she was no more Niffin pretty quick.
She wasn't even in book 2.
Nope, she was not supposed to be there at all, and here she is, and like this whole thing, she's like killing creatures' families, and then they're coming after her, and then they killed fucking cats, and like, that was not okay.
Like exploded them.
Yeah, I could not. It was a cute little gray kitten. Yeah, it did it twice, John. Yes, it did. Did it? And you said the same thing where you were like, "No, this one's not gonna die, Bree. It's fine."
Well, none of the bunnies died.
Oh,
yeah.
Actually,
second episode, the guy rips
the head off and then pulls the sword out or the knife out.
Okay, fine. You're right.
This was such a gory show. So if you don't like gore, this is not the show for you.
Yeah.
No. I wouldn't go as far as saying it's very gory. There are many, many episodes where there's none of that. There seriously is. I think that you could probably count. There are 13 times 5, so that's what, 65 episodes. You can count on probably two hands the amount of times there's an episode with gore. So up to 10 episodes out of 65 is pretty small.
I feel like it's a little bit more.
I feel
than
like
that,
it's more, but when there's gore, there's
a ton of there's gore. And it's gross.
I feel like most of my videos are my face.
I mean, they don't go easy. They want to be artistic and show some fantasy, cool, bloody stuff.
Look at
it's adult themes.
Of like, oh my gosh. So Q decides to play chicken with Alice Niffin and let her make the first move, but she's not. So he goes in with a new tactic and attacks her, and this pisses her off. He ends up finding another door and goes deeper into this mirror land and runs into Elliot.
Yeah, that does not happen.
No. They both share what's been going on in their lives, and Plum tells him, hey, to deal with Alice, you need to have an honest conversation with her about what happened. And Q agrees, but he wants to do it in the real world, so he pulls her through. And fire crazy happens, and finally magic, and he's able to get Alice not to be a Niffin anymore.
You know what's kind of sad? Q and Alice never have the real, like, honest conversation that they do in the book. In the show, they don't do it, which I think would have been very helpful. It's just that Alice ends up working with the library when everyone is against the library. So then Q doesn't trust her for that. He doesn't trust her because she was a Niffin. And, like, their relationship just gets really screwed up in the show. And this happened in season 2.
So we're with Janet and Poppy and Josh, and they get a message from Elliot to find Umber. They're like, I thought he was dead, but okay. So they go and do what he says. They go to the swamp. They swim until they find Castle Blackspire, and there's Umber, and he runs for a little bit and then he stops, and they're like, what the heck was that for? And he's like, oh, I thought you wanted to play chase. And then he tells them everything. And he took Martin's humanity because he was hoping he could be king of Fillory one day. And he's been enjoying being fake dead because no one comes looking for you. And Janet gets pissed, beats him up with her axe, and they see the end of the world is coming.
Yeah, none of that happens.
Because he's dead already.
Yeah, because Umber's already dead. So season 1.
Yes. Alice tells them all her adventures with being a Niffin, and she went back in time. She saw how Fillory began, and she's just so mad that Q brought her back because she was like, I was all powerful as a Niffin.
That happens in season 2. I don't think she's talked about that yet.
What
bacon? Are you going to? She doesn't talk about the bacon.
I don't talk about the bacon.
When Quentin is trying to become friendly with Alice, like, everyone's going off on quests, and he's like, no, I need to make sure that Alice is comfortable. Like, I just brought her back. She was a Niffin. This is going to be a hard change. And, like, especially since when you're a Niffin, you don't have to eat or do anything for sustenance. So he's like, yeah. So he's like trying to remind her about what it's like being human and make sure she eats and stuff. And she just does not want anything. And then he was like, oh, I remember what she likes. And he makes her a plate of bacon. So then she eats bacon. And then after she eats, she's like, oh, I miss being human. And then she sleeps with Quentin because she's like, oh, yeah.
That happens in both the books and the show. But then my favorite part is at the end, the very end, right? This is spoiler stuff. But at the very end, of, I'm going to go in slow in case people wanted to turn it off, but I don't think they would. Anyways, at the very end, the very last, they made this new world, and they, you know, I think Josh is like, yeah, I mean, there was this, there's field this of field of bacon, and then Alice is like, oh yeah, that's from me.
It was cute.
So Janet, Poppy, and Josh start watching the end of the world, and Josh and Poppy are like, we gotta get back to Castle Whitespire. And Janet's like, I'm just gonna stay here and watch it. But then a hippogriff comes, and she decided she's gonna soar over and watch. And then this battle breaks out, and it's all the Florian creatures. We got like the speaking animals with the non-speaking are going to battle, and then all these other creatures, like we got Humbledrum the bear, and then we see the stag that Quentin the had shot, the Leviathan turtle, like every single creature that has come up before is described in this actually really epic chapter.
I really fucking wish this happened in the show.
That would have been really cool. Josh eventually joins the battle and all this sort of stuff, and eventually here comes Julia, 8 feet tall and glowing, and she puts an end to the war. And she says it's time to go because Fillory is dying.
That does not happen at all.
No, but I mean, there are many things in the... Fillory in the show has many, oh my God, Fillory's, you know, having a meltdown. Fillory's having a crazy thing happening to it in the show that never happened in the books. This is one of those situations where it happened in the book, not the show, but similar situation. Also in the show, Julia's not God enough, really long enough to utilize her powers as much as she does in the books, like she did in that moment, which is crazy.
So the crow comes back, and we find out it was sent by Ember to get the spell, because Ember's plan is to make a whole new land and dip out, and so Fillory dies without him, and he doesn't die. And
which is insane, because Ember doesn't want anything but to live in Fillory. He wants Fillory in the show, anyways.
Uh-huh.
In the show, he's very much, this is Fillory. This is it. And Umber is the one who creates other worlds and so forth, and doesn't want Fillory as much.
And in the show, all of the magicians are the ones who are like, yep, time to ditch Fillory. We're going to let it die, and then we're going to make this new world and put all the Florians on that world.
But Ember didn't even want to bring anyone.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that was the difference there.
Yeah.
So this is the bacon scene that the guys were talking about, and they eventually had sex, and she's becoming normal again.
Kind of normal again. She's still pissed.
Yeah.
But she's like, okay, I remember what it's like to be human, but fuck you, Q.
So Elliot and Plum did not want to wait around because they hear them having sex. They're like, oh gosh, let's go. And they end up going to the fountain in the library. And soon Alice and Q join, and it turns out they're in the library in the Netherlands. And Penny brought them there so that he could take his page back that Quentin has. And he's like, you've had it for a year, so you owe your debts here for a year. And Alice punches him in the face, is like, no, he doesn't. Mm-hmm. And they went off to just wander and look at the library, and he gives them a tour. And there's a book for every person ever who's ever alive. And Plum returns the Fillory book from Rupert Chatwin. And Penny is so ecstatic. She's like, I think this can pay for his debts. And also, we gotta go, because don't you want more Fillory books? And Q's like, I know how to say Fillory. And he's like, okay, yeah, go.
So in the show, they know about their books from the get-go, and they're always reading their books, which is another thing they're not supposed to do.
And they're written by Alice, but not Alice at the same time.
Like, yeah.
A variant of her.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that doesn't really happen.
So they end up going to Fillory, and they saw it dying, and Quentin knew.
Oh, John is saying that they're not allowed to read their books in the show, too, but they kept doing it anyway. Whereas in the book, they found out about it at the end.
Penny said, you can read it, but I've heard people that regret reading it, I've never read mine. So Quentin remembered how Alice said Fillory started. They started by killing gods, and so he's like, okay, I gotta kill Ember. So let's do it. So Alice turns him into a dragon, and he does this, and he's like, ends up cutting Ember's head off after this battle. And here comes Umber, and he's like, technically you have to kill me too, because we're both gods of Fillory. But he sacrificed himself, And then Q used his mending spell to fix all of Fillory. And when he was done, he went, oh, but first.
Yeah, I was like, you skipped a big part.
Because the gods were dead, the god power had to go somewhere, so it went in Q. And then he used his mending spell. But when it was done, he's like, I don't want to be a god. And he went back to being human.
Yeah, that does not happen because the two have already died. And when they died, it just took away magic. Wow, yeah, and Q died at the end of season 4.
All right, so if you recall in the books, he does he creates a sword.
Oh yeah, to kill him
at Breakbills during the initial test with Fog. When he does the House of Cards, he also does the sword out of the nickels or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually, when he summons that sword a second time, we don't know where it was in the meantime. It's probably just something that's like part of him. He manifests in his last attempt to because he couldn't kill Ember with that sword because it wasn't a god killing weapon. So, you know, Asmodeus had it from Rupert's suitcase. So in a last attempt to kill Ember, he stacks a pile of nickels that he had previously appeared in the mirror world. Remember, those are the power coins that he created with Plum. And on top of those, no, it wasn't Mayakovsky's. It was ones that he created with Plum. And then he puts the last Mayakovsky's coin as well. And the pile becomes the same sword he invoked before. And with it, he beheads both Ember and Umber, enabling him to become Fillory's god.
Mm-hmm. That did not happen in the show.
Nope.
No. But
he does. So he summons that sword 2 times in the books. And we assume that he can summon it again at his will. But this is what it looked like. And I'm pretty sure it showed up in the show at some point. If you can remember.
Oh, yeah.
It was in the show at some point. I just don't remember what episode or why he summons
it. It's Elliot's sword. It's the one that he does the spell on.
Yeah, but I think Quentin manifests a sword then at some point in the show, and it's a callback to the sword that he does in the books. I just don't remember exactly when or why.
Well, I think he's the one who told Elliot about the sword to do and to do the magic on it when he had to do the Lorien battle.
So Quentin is already forgetting what it was like to be a god, and Julia said, hey, you need a reward. Like, you just saved Fillory. And he's like, all I want to do is go to the other side, and she like you did. And she said, okay. So they go to the other side, and this is where he finds the flower, and he takes a seedling from it, and she's like, you just have to grow it again. And he's able to do a spell, and he might be able to make his own land. And he took some of the seedlings, and he went home, and Poppy, Janet, Elliot, and Josh are all talking about new Fillory, and Quentin realizes, you know what? My time with Fillory is done.
So Quentin is dead when all this happens, so he's not the one making the new world, and there's only one seed. And so Alice, Margot, Josh, and Fen are the ones who make essentially new Fillory.
New Fillory. Fillory 2. New Fillory is what they called it. And Margot is King Margot once again, as dubbed by...
Hi, King Margot, the creator.
Dubbed by Fen. Mm-hmm. And Fen is the birth mother of New Fillory, literally, because she held the world seed in her body because it needed a warm, moist place. So there you go. It was just amazing. I would love to see...
fact that you say that right after.
I know. No, I meant the world of the new world. The new world, guys. Come on. I really wish that they kept going, like another season. Oh, I just want to see what adventures await for these guys after that.
Quentin's dead. I don't care about anyone else. This last season was really hard for me. I was just glad that Elliot was back to normal.
No, Quentin is an integral part, and the whole season 5 of the TV show is them going through the grief stages and learning how to continue with their lives with their friend gone. And they all do that in their own unique ways, which is shown. And then that's what makes season 5 so powerful, even though Quentin's not in it. But still, like you can see that the show still has legs even without him. So them continuing on with another season, like a season six, would have been, you know, completely beyond the bounds of the books, because at this point they've used up all of the material in the books, essentially. Not quite. I mean,
they probably could find ways to bring more. They could find
ways to bring more, of course, but like the vast majority of it was discussed and or hinted at in some way and had happened. So, but I still would have liked to see more. I know that you can do so with your own imagination, but it's my favorite show. So if they wanted to make more, I wouldn't be opposed. I did hear at some point, I heard that they might be making a spinoff of The Magicians.
Who would it follow?
There was an actor who was talking in like a like recently on a podcast who said something about, oh yeah, they're making a spinoff of The Magicians, like as just a one-off comment. They weren't even discussing The Magicians. That just happened to be thrown out. I only found it because some of the other huge magician fans on the Reddit subreddit page for the show had, of course, come across that and posted the link to that interview and so forth. And yeah, I'm not sure who would it be in it or anything like that. And I know that, you know, in the thread on Reddit, there was a lot of other huge fans who it was quite polarized. You know, you had people who were like, yeah, I would love nothing more than to have another magician spinoff. Just I love the show so much. I would love more of it. And then other people were like, it was done so well the first time. I'm in love with all those characters and the actors that played them specifically. Mm-hmm. I don't want anything to blemish that for
That's
me.
That's where you know? I
so
land.
I'm like, they make spinoffs of so many things. Like they make spinoffs of Star Wars. They make spinoffs of Dune and other stuff. Yeah, I mean, sure. Like they make spinoffs of things that have been around in the past actually still come out amazing, even though it's a spinoff. So I still think there's a world where they create a new spinoff and it's great. So I don't want to put it down until I see it.
So IMDb cast 462 people for this show
because there are 5 seasons.
Yes. And a lot of them are like somewhat important characters. So it's like,
well, we have to absolutely do the main.
Well, yeah.
Like 6.
Mm-hmm. And then. So we have Stella Maeve as Julia.
She grew on me. At first, I didn't like her. And then I was like, okay, I agree. Like you as Julia.
By like season 4, I wasn't mad at her anymore.
Okay. John, what do you think about Stella?
I think she was a fantastic Julia. I got nothing else to say. I think she did great.
We have Hale Appelman as Elliot.
King. He is king. I love him.
He did fantastic.
Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah.
Yep, the best.
Arjun Gupta played Penny.
Yeah, he did good.
Yeah.
Also the best.
I loved him. I know you didn't because he didn't match the book at all.
Nope.
But how did you like his character development? Did it make you hate Penny less?
No, I still don't like Penny.
Oh, my gosh. Then we got Summer Bishel as Margot. Loved her.
Hated her.
What?
Yeah, that's who I'm recasting.
Yeah, she was great. She was absolutely great. I have nothing bad to say about her. She was exactly what the character was meant to look like, and I think, from my opinion, she did great.
No, the actress made Margot one of my least favorite characters when I liked her somewhat in the books. I was okay with Janet, but then Margot, I was like, oh, I don't like you, girl.
That was opposite for me. I loved Margot, but I did not like Janet.
I would recast Lizzie Kaplan.
I could see her as Janet, but not Margot.
Mm-hmm.
I freaking loved Margot.
Nope, Margot was my least favorite.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I can't even believe that.
I disliked her more than Penny.
I don't believe that's insane to me.
No, she drove me crazy.
Oh my gosh.
I just think I felt like she was too rough around the edges. Like every other, I mean, it says someone who cusses all the fucking time, but I felt like every other word was what the fuck face or something like that, or overy up a million times in one episode. I was like, God damn, can you just shut up?
That's like my favorite part.
Nope.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, We have Olivia Taylor Dudley as Alice.
She's not who I pictured as Alice, but it's hard because Alice is just such a different... I don't have anyone for Alice. And she was fine as she was, so I'm okay with her being Alice, but I didn't like how she played Alice.
She's the best at being Alice because no one else has done Alice, so I've got nothing bad to say about her. I think that her quirkiness, her intelligence, her shyness, she all did it very, very well. I mean, it's just she's the best Alice there has been so far, if they ever do a spinoff, and I don't even know if anyone could do it better. So.
She grew on me, but I don't like Alice, so that's what it is. Then we have Jason Ralph as Quentin.
Fucking love him. He was so good. It's funny because me and Allie have had many talks about this, and from the pictures I had first seen before I had started watching it, I was like, I do not picture fucking Quentin with long hair, and I'm going to hate that. And like, yeah, first episode I was like, oh, I hate your hair, but by the end of the first episode I was like, oh, you're Quentin though.
All I have to say is he's also the best.
He's actually supposed to have long hair after reading the books.
I realized from John's little comic Alice book.
But he's fine. He did Quentin, but I don't like Quentin either. So I liked him better when he cut his hair in like season 4.
Right, as he was dying.
Yes. Jade Taylor played Katie, who was not in the books.
Yeah, she was.
Okay, you're right.
She was a weird...
She was a combo character.
Combination character. She's fine.
Yeah, I thought she was good. Yeah.
She's Asmodeus, right, who is in the books almost the whole time. And she was Amanda Orloff, which was in from the very beginning of in book one. So she's both, and yeah, she's great.
We have Brittany Curran as Fen.
I loved her. I thought she was sweet. She was a sweet little innocent thing who kind of grew up.
Mm-hmm. Loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a goof, but awesome.
Rick Worthy, Henry Fogg.
He was good. Not what I pictured when I was thinking of Fogg. I was basically picturing a Slughorn type professor.
Yeah.
But he was good.
Yeah, he was fine. I mean, he seemed just very... I agree. I pictured like a... Just a old relaxed, professor old, guy, yeah, and yeah. He was not.
No. He's so unique. The way that he portrayed Henry Fogg, no one else could do it the way he did. And I've got nothing bad to say about
John
it.
John loves Fogg. Every time he Fogg, was on, he was like, this man.
Fogg, he is so comedically blunt, and his cadence when he speaks, just his voice is just so good. And for Fogg, he's great. I don't think that I would recast Fogg as anyone else. That was amazing.
All right, we got Trevor Einhorn as Josh.
Pretty good.
I love Josh.
He was
my
good.
Gosh.
I'm hoping there's a magician's cookbook out there somewhere. Oh, God, I need to try some of Josh's food.
We have Magina
Tova.
Tova? She played Librarian Zelda. I actually recognized her from somewhere, and I don't know where. And yeah, she did fine as a little snooty librarian.
Yeah, she was good.
What? She was amazing, guys. Yeah, what the John hell? Zelda is the fucking bomb. I love Zelda. She's so good.
Anyways, all right. So we have Marina. Casey Roll played her.
A character not in the books, but she's kind of a pivotal hedge bitch in the show.
No, I'm pretty sure that she is in the books. She's the girl who teaches Julia from the beginning.
Well, yeah, but she's never named in the books.
Not as that name. I think her name is Victoria or something in the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's the one who has to do Julia has to beat the 77 levels and...
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But yeah, I liked her character. The actress was very strong in that regard. I got nothing bad to say. She's good.
Okay.
So we have Mackenzie Astin as Reynard the Fox. Oh my gosh, Sean Astin's brother, we found out.
Yeah.
Freaking love Sean Astin. Do not look similar at all. I would never have known.
I see it.
I don't at all.
Sure. I see it.
I thought he was really good. He was really creepy. But yeah. But he had to play a creepy character when he was Reynard, but he was also Richard. So he was a really nice, loving character too.
Yeah, he did really good. Both of them very good, yeah.
About Reynard?
Mm-hmm.
No, I think he did great. I think he did a fantastic job at the playing Reynard. Also playing Richard before Reynard and after Reynard, because he was again down in the underworld bowling, trying to find his son.
Yep.
I hope he does find his son. We never know.
David Call played Pete. I don't remember who Pete is. So
he's the blonde dude. He's Lady Love. Love Lady.
No, I still don't remember. So good job.
He's the one.
How can you not remember Love Lady?
I know. He's such a prominent character. He's the one who like gets Julia involved in the hedges. He's the one who then helps them.
Is he the one who she ended up hooking up with at the beginning?
Yes.
Okay. Then. Oh, yeah. He's fine. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought he did good. He was a good scummy dude.
Sean McGuire played the Dark King, aka Robin Hood. Not in The Magicians.
I was going to say, I was like, what?
No, so many of these characters were from Once Upon a Time. And I freaking love him in Once Upon a Time. And I was like, oh my gosh, I got so excited.
That's funny.
I love him. So
he did good.
Yeah.
He played a good, very conflicted dude.
Yeah, he was good. AKA Rupert. He was good.
Marley Matlin played Harriet.
I think she did good. It was fun to have her in the show.
It is. It's fun to have diverse type of acting.
Yeah.
Zelda's daughter. Mm-hmm. Mirror World storyline there that we won't get into now, but yeah, just awesome.
We got Harvey Julian? Benedict.
I love him because he's from my Zoe's Extraordinary playlist.
I just thought he was so sweet and cute.
Mm-hmm. He plays those characters all the time.
Yeah, he was good.
Charles Mesur played the Beast.
He did good. He was creepy.
Mm-hmm.
He was very creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I loved his singing.
Oh, yeah, that was the first. Okay, I did not like his musicals.
No.
He was just a weird musical because it was no one else was ever singing with him. It was always just him singing. And I was like, either do the full musical, like the full episode of musical, or don't have him singing.
Yeah.
He was good at playing a super powerful dude who could hold off gods, and also you just never knew. He was upbeat, cheerful, positive, but he would cut your throat like at any instant. It was just one of those, like, you never know what kind of curveballs, and he played it very well.
Mm-hmm.
We have Rose Liston played Jane Chatwin.
She did really good.
Was she the older Jane Chatwin or the younger Jane Chatwin?
Yeah, she was the like
older one.
She was the one that was always talking to everyone.
Okay, that's what I thought.
She was good.
Yeah, I would say she was definitely very good. I don't know who else would play such a role. She did great.
We have Charles Shaughnessy played Christopher Plover.
Why do I know him?
Oh, he's from The Nanny.
I freaking love him. And
I recognized him too, but I don't know from what. And yeah, he's funny.
He was awesome.
I mean, that's bad to say when he was played a...
I know. I hated the character he played.
Yeah.
But because I knew him, just didn't know how, I liked him. And he's from The Nanny. He's from Modern Family.
Yep.
That's okay. How... He's one episode, though. That's where you recognize him.
That's where
him.
I would recognize him from.
Also, Ghosted? Nope. That's not a show you've watched. Yeah, I love him. So, oh, he's in Castle, too.
Oh, yeah.
Played pretty well. Plover, I mean, man, pedophilic author, dude. I mean, hey, he hit all the notes that you would probably want for that type of character. So good job.
Congratulations.
You played that well.
Garcelle? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Boves? Our Lady Underground.
She did good.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
She did good. Wasn't in the show very much, but everything that, you know, the character needed to be portrayed as, she did well.
We have Judith Hogue played Stephanie Quinn.
She did good. She was such a bitch. I felt...
I know.
I was like, oh, I love you, but I hate you.
I know. Yeah, I still, every time I saw her, I was like, is it Halloween?
Woman who disliked her daughter but also loved her very much. It was a confliction that she played very well. Yeah.
Well, then we will do Ryan Steele is Plum Chatwin. She was fine for what she was. She was not Book Plum at all.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, same. I didn't even remember she was Plum.
Yeah, that's true.
She's fine.
John, how do you feel about Plum?
I think it was interesting, the way they made Plum's character kind of adapted for the TV screen. I think that she did it fairly well. I just not a huge fan of the way that it was told necessarily in the TV series, which is fine. But nothing, you know, for what it was, she did good.
Yeah.
We have Nico Evers Swindell played Umber.
Oh, he was fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was the good one.
Yeah. He was good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was definitely excellent. I liked when he required little goofy fillery knowledge to get inside of his place in his house on Earth and so forth. Like, you know, I guess I'm talking about the character more than the actor now. But no, the actor was good. it's kind of what you expected. Maybe not. From the books, a little bit of a quirkiness. And he did it well. Obviously, the TV show took liberties on the characters, which the actors portrayed. So it's not as maybe directly correlated with the books, but yeah, it's still good. Yeah, I have nothing bad to say. Same thing with our next one, which is Dominic Burgess, mm-hmm. who played Ember. And yeah, I've got the same thoughts on that.
I think he was goofy, so...
Yeah, maybe a little goofier in the show.
Yeah.
Definitely goofier than Umber was.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why I would have expected them to be more similar or
yeah.
Yeah. Like they were like extreme opposites.
To me, Ember and Umber were always yin and yang. But I don't think I pictured it as drastic as it was in the show.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then we have Madeline Arthur played Frey.
Again, she wasn't in the book, so for what she was, she did good.
Yes. And Brian F. O'Brien. What?
O'Byrne?
O'Byrne. That would be probably better than...
Yeah.
That would be a bummer.
Poor Brian.
Played Mayakovsky.
He was hilarious.
Loved him.
He was
so
amazing.
Much. He was one of my favorite characters.
He was one of the best.
Exactly what you would expect. From the books. It was amazing.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Yes. And then we have Felicia Day. She's Poppy.
Fucking, she was fine for what she was, but Poppy was one of my favorite book characters, and they fucked her up.
She was definitely a Charlie, which is what her character is in Supernatural, more than a Poppy, which is what she was playing.
Yeah, I was pissed. Pissed.
Yeah, I can basically agree with both of you. I don't know her from Supernatural, but I know from the Guild, that's an older series, but awesome. And she's nothing like that, but yeah, definitely just different from the books all around. But she did well, nonetheless. I don't think Felicia Day does a bad job with anything she does. So,
mm-hmm. I love her. I met her at Comic-Con.
Yeah, you did.
I did.
I watched you meet her, so I was in the presence of
yes,
Poppy.
Yes, you were. Oh my gosh. Well, those are all our characters that we're covering. Sorry if we did not cover your favorite.
Mm-hmm. We only covered our favorites.
Just kidding. Oh my gosh. Well, now we get to the tough questions.
Mm-hmm.
Is the theme of the show, the book and the show the same?
I would say, yeah.
It's basically. Magicians.
Yeah.
The theme is
they
the same.
They keep going through quests. They have to save magic. Yada, yada, yada.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's about different.
It's about, you know, in the books, it's more, you know, Quentin's life development, his character story, and how he manifests into who he becomes and the journey there and so forth. But in the show, it takes that and it also does all the characters. So it's about character development. It's about gaining friendship and losing loved ones and just exploring the world as a young adult and questing and so forth. It's really great. And I think both both forms of media do it well. Same theme in my eyes.
I always say, you know, we always say that the umbrella is there. This is the opposite. This is like the raindrops are there, but the umbrella wasn't not there to help.
Yeah, not in the slightest. I was upset.
So, do the characters stay true?
No.
None.
No.
Except Elliot and Quentin.
And Quentin, sometimes. There were some times when Quentin did not stay true to himself, but for the majority,
he did. Dean Fogg did?
No, he did not.
How not?
Dean Fogg is a dude who's laid back and relaxed and barely in the story.
Just because he got showed more doesn't mean he changed. And I also think Jane Chatwin, for the most part, was relatively similar.
I could see Jane, not Dean Fogg.
The Beast, really similar.
Okay, the Beast more. Is true, yeah.
Reynard the Fox, also very similar, just shown more.
Yeah, that one's fine.
See, there are more than you guys initially let on, you're though. Right.
Okay, so like maybe 25% of them stay true to who they are.
I would say like 10%.
Yeah. No, I would say something like 30% or more. There are some character differences, but for the most part, I think that those are small changes. I think that they did a great job with character adaptation.
But out of how many characters did you just say? Let's say like 5, 6.
Yeah.
There's 400 and something characters.
Yeah.
400 and something cast members. That's not characters, because you know how many of those were background characters that didn't have lines that you just saw in the back?
So probably out of 100 characters.
No, how many did we actually go through? Because by the time we got through that list, we were talking about characters that only were in there for 4 episodes. 27. 27 actual, like, and we're down
no,
to the
those were
characters
the only
that
ones
were in
that
four
I
episodes.
Wanted to talk about.
No, I know. I guess you deleted several of them, but we're talking about there weren't 400 and something actual.
No, but there's probably about characters. 100 characters that did not stay true to them.
No, there's many of them that didn't even exist in the books. But mm-hmm. I do think, in general, many of the characters were very, very good adaptations.
Allie's got numbers for us.
Out of the 6 that we said, okay, fine, match.
I only gave up 6. I only gave 6 examples because you guys couldn't think of any more.
I guess Benedict was one too.
Yeah, that's true. And Bingle and the Sloth.
But we didn't talk about those guys. We're at 25%.
Okay.
Out of the ones
so
we talked about.
So my 25% was the correct number here.
No, not necessarily correct, because we aren't doing a very thorough job. We aren't going through every single character saying, that's did true. It match, did it not match? We just came up with some more examples, and it added up to 25%. It may be as high as 30%.
Our
maybe a
question
little more than that.
Is just for like an overall. Overall, do the characters stay true in the show, how they are written in the book? And that's a no.
I would say it's a yes and a no.
All right. Well, which do you prefer?
No. Hold on.
But I will say Quentin's is largely very similar.
Oh, yeah. His is very similar. There were only a few
times. And Julia's is very similar.
No, not in the slightest.
No, it's very similar in the way that she, at the beginning where she has to become a hedge and she gets kicked out of Breakfast and so forth.
It's her character. It's how she acts, not her story.
Okay, so she's not an emo person in as she was in the books, but she does have an emo phase that relates to the books later on in the show because she loses her shade, right? It's very, very similar feel.
Yeah, I would not give you Julia.
No, but I would say I want the audience members to realize that this show has integrity that is based off of the books, and the characters that you read about, you will see them on the screen and you will find similarities. And some of them will not all be black and white contrast, like, hey, this is exactly how I thought it was going to be. That's just not probably not the case with most adaptations. There's going to be some creative liberties that take place. So,
that's a lie.
But I don't think so. Listen to
our podcast? No, he does not listen
to
our podcast.
No, I don't. But also, like, I do think, this is one of those series that, you know, has the author worked with the, supposedly, I did some Googling. They worked with the directors and the crew to create this variation of the book series as a TV format. So Quentin is Quentin. Like, he is what he is in the books, very, very close. And he's the main dude. dude, right? He's and Elliot is very, very close to what he was in the books, albeit shown a lot more in the show and so forth. Alice also very similar to books. These are main characters. These are integral to the storyline. And if they are all staying true, then the rest of it, even if it doesn't match up black and white, it's still going to be very, very close to the books because of that. Like, you have the main characters be aligning very well. It's going to stay on track in that regard. That's my opinion. None of these guys think so, but they're not a mega fan like I am, so they don't really have a say.
Well, all right then.
I think we can tell which one John prefers.
Which do you prefer?
I actually prefer the TV show, but the books are amazing. I do prefer the TV show, though. I felt like the character development was a lot deeper, especially for the rest of the characters. That's why I prefer that. But if the books, I don't want to say anything bad about them because they are amazing. They're the first works that Lev Grossman created, in the Magician's world, and Quentin's storyline is fantastic. So nothing bad there. Great, great, great. I just liked seeing more development in other characters.
Allie?
I liked the show better. I didn't hate the books. They were just, if you watch the show first mm-hmm. and then go to the books, they're very slow mm-hmm. compared to the show. Yeah, because I liked, you know, we're with this character, all over the place. But then in the books, it just follows Q. And it's like, I mean, that's understandable. But same with John. I liked seeing all the different storylines and all this sort of stuff. And so that's why I preferred the show.
No, I preferred the book. 100%. I preferred the book. I love the book so much. I wish that the show stuck to the book more and just elaborated on what the book had given them rather than just making their own stories. But I will say I appreciate the show. It is an enjoyable show. And like, it's the first comparison that we've done where even though the show is so far off base from the book, and I love the book and those characters are like I hold near and dear, it's almost because the characters aren't acting how they act in the book that I'm okay with how the show does it.
You can delete the part where I said you can delete the part where I said that you guys don't have a say or whatever.
Oh, okay.
And this part too, obviously. Because that was a little too weird.
But I prefer the book. I love the book.
Mm-hmm. Would you recommend it to a friend?
Oh, for sure. I've already done it in our group chats.
I think I have too.
You guys are the only... I recommend it to you guys. It's the only reason why it's on this podcast.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yes, it is.
So I recommended it to a friend already. True. Multiple friends.
Yeah. Well, oh my gosh.
Thanks for doing this with us, John.
Yeah, that was fun.
Are you glad that we finally did it?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a lot of work reading and rewatching all of this. So I'm glad that we did it and got it off the table. And it also was just good to have that refresh for me because it is my favorite stuff, my favorite TV series. Yeah, it was amazing. Thanks for doing it.
Yeah, of course.
It was fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad we did it too.
Yeah, me too.
Very glad it's over.
Yeah.
But not because of the content.
Yeah. Well, actually,
stress.
One thing that I was going to say was I actually plan on going back and rewatching it because I want to go back and
enjoy watch it, not stress watch it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, same.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like I said, when I had restarted just the first season, it was so much more enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Because you... We're done with that part where you needed to do it because right. You needed to do it.
Yeah. Now I mm-hmm. want to go watch it for fun.
Yeah, me too. Same.
Oh, man. All right, you guys. Well, we're still on our break, but only for a couple more weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Soon, it's my goal to get our website updated with season six schedule.
Ooh.
Maybe I'll work on that and it'll be ready
by the end of this.
Yeah, by the time this episode comes out, I will work on it. Hopefully it's ready. If it is not ready, it will be ready soon. This is my kid's last week of school, so I have no idea what my brain is going to be doing.
Yep.
But you can check that out at offscript253.wixsite.com/offscript.
We also really suck.
What?
Y'all. I wanted us to do this at the start of the very first episode, but I guess you know what? We doing it here. We are sponsoring the Kent Nerd Party.
Yeah, we are.
Mm-hmm. So if you go check out their website, we're on that website too.
It's a little like, you can see our picture.
Mm-hmm. We're excited for the Nerd Party. This also means that we will be at the Nerd Party again.
So in June.
June 7th.
Come find us.
Yeah. We'll be hanging out.
Yep. And make sure you rate, subscribe, review. Now is a great time when you don't have a lot of episodes to listen to. You're like, what am I going to do with off script? You can go find all of our episodes and rate them all 5 stars.
Sierra's been going through and re-listening. It was hilarious because I actually switched our podcast hosting platform to a new website. And I was like, we're not going to have any new listens because we're in our down season. But we have a shit ton more than I thought we would. We already within the 2 weeks that we've had it, we're at 71 listens. And I'm like, wow. Yeah, and I'm like, we're not putting out new stuff. OK, but then mid last week, Sierra texted me and Sierra's been listening to all of our old episodes. She was like, I decided to start listening again.
She's the best.
Thanks, Sierra.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Oh my gosh. And so a reminder, season 6 is listener pick. So it's going to be a really fun personal type season. Mm-hmm. And if you gave a pick, your name should be out there.
It should be.
Mm-hmm.
We'll shout you out when that one comes.
We sure will.
All right, guys. So with that,
the magicians
went off script.
Bye. Happy holidays, guys.
Merry Christmas.
Bye. Oh, Merry Christmas.
Bye. Thanks for sticking with us.
We hope you enjoyed it.
If you did, we would greatly appreciate it if you gave us 5 beautiful stars, reviewed, and subscribed.
You can also follow us on Facebook at Offscript, on Instagram at OffscriptPodcast21, and on TikTok at Offscript_pod.
Shoutouts to Madam Ashen Creations for our adorable logo art.
And Adam Daniel for our incredible theme song.
And to Creative Cinephile Productions for producing our podcast.
See you next time.
Serena.
And I'm Rachel.
We are the hosts of Book Tales.
If you like reading books,
drinking cocktails,
and Scottish accents,
then meet your new favourite podcast.
Come with us as we explore different themes from romanticism to horror and everything in between.
We pair each book with a bespoke cocktail and tell you everything you'll need to make one.
And each week, play our fun game tailored to each book.
Find Book Tales wherever you get your podcasts. So grab your book.
Grab your booze
for Book Tales.